Philip has just lost the respect of the youth league football team he coaches. He was asked what New England should do in the draft, and his answer was objectively terrible. The Athletic just wrote a great article about this, but Philip doesn't have the Athletic or the respect of a boisterous group of 11-year-olds who once looked up to him. Learn from Philip's error, get the Athletic, and get the info you need to speak draft fluently. Greg is usually a fan of water cooler talk, but it's draft season, and that's all anyone wants to talk about. The Athletic has loads of articles about this year's draft, but Greg doesn't have the Athletic, so now he's filling up his water bottle in the bathroom sink, which, to remind you, is the sink people use after they use the bathroom. Get the Athletic and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
This is Baldy's Breakdowns, the podcast with NFL insiders Brian Baldinger and Jason LaCanfora, an Odyssey Sports original.
Welcome to a very special pre-draft edition of Baldy's Breakdowns here on Odyssey. We appreciate you guys listening in. Brian and I are incredibly fired up to take you through the first round of the draft. I am Jason LaCanfora, at Jason LaCanfora on Twitter. Baldy is at Baldy NFL on Twitter. And Baldy, we're recording this mere hours before the first round kicks off. There's been so much pablum, frankly, so much BS, so much clutter, and then also a lot of really good informed breakdowns, evaluations, and calculations of this upcoming draft class that is clearly unlike any other because of the lack of a combine, because of the lack of some of the standard medical testing we've been used to, because of the inability to get your hands on these kids on a practice field, in your building, on a whiteboard like you normally would. Away we go, and I suspect there will be plenty of twists and turns along the way.
There will be. And where I want to start with this, because, you know, I mean, everybody's got a podcast, you know, us included, yeah. Jason, and everybody's got a mock draft, not just a mock draft, but I mean, you know, three and four mock draft. I mean, so it changes every day. So I always like to start free agency and the draft with the team that won the Super Bowl, because everybody's going to chase Tampa right now. Now, obviously, Tom Brady was Tom Brady, and he's the ultimate general. But if you go back to their draft, not just last year, where they took Tristan Wirfs with the 12th pick.
Yeah.
They took Antoine Winfield Jr. in the second round. And in prior years, they drafted Vita Vea. You know, and they went and drafted, you know, Carlton Davis and Jamel Dean and Jordan Whitehead. And, like, really the foundation to that team was really built through the draft.
Yes.
And nobody really knew it at the time. But they just needed a general to come in there and put it together. And I remember the general manager in Tampa, Jason Light, you know, starting when he drafted Jameis Winston. Like, nobody was more under the gun than Jason Light for years.
Yeah.
And now he's like this celebrated, you know, hero.
Baldy, they took the kicker in the second or third round. And I had to cut him, like, early in the season.
You're absolutely right. And, you know, and Bruce Arians, like, I mean, nobody hated kickers more than he did. And they couldn't find one. But, like, my point is, they built the foundation of that team, Mike Evans and Chris Godwin. Mm-hmm. They built the foundation through this process that we start tomorrow night in. And I think, you know, if you went back even a couple years earlier than that, the New Orleans Saints finished the year 7-9, three straight years in a row. And then 2017, they hit a draft where they got, you know, Marshawn Lattimore, Ryan Ramczyk, and they got Alvin Kamara, and their whole team got turned around. And so you look at the Washington football team last year, Chase Young, Antonio Gibson, Cam Curl. I mean,
yeah,
you hit on a couple of key pieces of guys that really contribute. You can turn your fortunes around. And that's where I kind of really want to start this whole process today with Jason. I just wanted to get that out there.
Totally. No, and again, I think this draft, because of all the unique variables and the lack of the sort of hallmarks, the lack of bankable information that you would have in a normal year just through the combine alone in and of itself maybe separates the men from the boys even more so as to who gets the real information and who doesn't. And when you just go back to the tape, who sees it for what it is and who swings and misses. Well, we talked quite a bit a couple of weeks ago about the 49ers and their self-made sort of quandary that they've put themselves in, giving up all that draft capital to go to three. And then to frankly have some mixed messaging about what their intent was at the time of the trade, were they already locked in on a player before some of the other players had even worked out. It was a little odd. Since we last talked, Kyle Shanahan and John Lynch spoke to the media again, and that was one of the more defensive press conferences I've ever seen. Kyle Shanahan, we might all be dead by Sunday. It could be Armageddon by the first round. What's the difference which quarterback we take? I don't know about you, Baldy, but I listened to that whole thing, and I sat back, and even the way they talked about Garoppolo and the way Lynch said, look, this is Shanahan's pick. Maybe I read it wrong, but I read it as, you know what? It is Mac Jones, and we don't care what the rest of the world says, and we believe in it. And, yeah, he is the most maybe plug and play of anybody not named Lawrence. And so we might have to trade Garoppolo after all, because if it's not Lance, if it's not Fields, if it's not someone who you absolutely have to redshirt, and we gave all that up to go and get him because we think he's the best thing to help us win sooner rather than later, then do we really need a $25 million backup? So I'm kind of in my head connecting all those dots saying this is their way of saying to their fan base, it's Mac Jones, get used to it. And yeah, we might have to ship another quarterback out. What did you take from it?
I'm not very far away from, you know, that interpretation there, Jason. I said when they made the trade that they knew exactly who they were going to get. Otherwise, you don't give up three number ones and a third and all the stuff they did, which most of these teams that, you know, that trade up over, you know, whether it was RG3 or, you know, Carson Wentz, most of these teams give up way too much.
Sure.
And I thought they did. But I thought the only way that you would do it, the only way Jed York and his father would sign off on it is if you sat there and told him, this is who I'm going to get.
Right.
This is why we're going to get him. And this is who's going to lead our franchise. And this is who's going to be the next Joe Montana and Steve Young. I mean, that's what I thought. Now, I thought, you know, initially, I thought it was all about Justin Fields.
Mm-hmm.
Because I thought he was the most talented player next to Trevor Lawrence in this draft. And I still believe that. I think he's better than Zach Wilson. I think he's better than Mac Jones. I think he's the second most talented quarterback in this draft. And if you want to compare him to Trevor Lawrence, I don't think he's very far away. He wasn't in high school. He wasn't throughout his college career. I really don't have any issue with Justin Fields at all. And I don't understand anybody that is dropping him for whatever reason.
Agreed.
And so that being said, at the time, I thought, okay, I'm hearing Mac Jones, and I just said to myself, like, why would you give up all this for Mac Jones? I mean, who else sees Mac Jones like this savior, like the way the 49ers evidently do? And I still believe that's the pick. You can put Trey Lance in there. I don't see that at all. You can tell me about his upside. You can tell me about his talent. That's fine. He was god-awful against Central Arkansas this year. He's a running quarterback. You're not going to do that in the NFL like he did in that conference. So, I mean, I have problems with that. So if it's Mac Jones, it's Mac Jones. But that fan base, like I'm sort of on the pulse. I know you are too. They're going to explode.
Yep.
Like it is going to be like Donovan McNabb getting drafted in Philadelphia.
Yep.
I mean, it's going to be that type of backlash. And I think Kyle knows it. And I think that's kind of why he said some of the things he said the other day.
Yeah, I think that was a get used to it. We know better than you, and trying to get a little bit ahead of this thing. But and now, if that is the case, and they do move Garoppolo, instead of moving him from a position of strength, you know, maybe coming off an 11-win season next year, everybody knows that you're trying to peddle the contract. And hey, five are going to go in the first round. So I don't know. You know, that can't be good for Garoppolo's trade value. If it is Mac Jones at three, Baldy at four, as we speak right now, I think Atlanta would really like to trade down. I think their football people would like to trade down because they know they're not particularly close. But the last time they picked this high, the owner made the pick, not Thomas Dimitroff. And the owner made the right pick. He picked Matt Ryan. The football people wanted Dorsey at the time. I can't imagine he isn't heavily involved in this now, especially with a rookie GM and a rookie head coach. And he extended, he kicked more of Matt Ryan's money into future years, guaranteed money into future years. So I think it's Kyle Pitts, unless someone knocks their socks off at four, and I don't think they're going to get their socks knocked off.
Well, let me ask you this, Jason. You know, some of the reports came out that Julio Jones is up for sale. You know, that he, that his contract could be taken, he could be traded. I don't know if that's true or not. I don't know what you know about that. But if that is true, like, are they already kind of saying, all right, look, we might as well just tear this thing down and let's just start fresh. I mean, Justin Fields, the local kid right from Atlanta. Let's, you know, let's, we've got a new coach, a new general manager. Why not a new quarterback and start fresh? I mean, to me, that wouldn't be, you know, that's not a revelation. A lot of teams have done things like that. But I believe Matt Ryan has a lot left. And if you give him this tight end and, you know, you put Arthur Smith in there with maybe some, you know, some really good two tight end set with Hayden Hurst and some of the things that I think he did in Tennessee that could really protect Matt Ryan a little bit better. And you've got Calvin Ridley and Julio and Gage, and all of a sudden you throw this tight end in the mix and you go draft the running back, like, that offense might really come alive. And, you know, I think I know Arthur Blank pretty well. I've known him a long time. I did the preseason games for 5 years. I was in his office a bunch. They got to put some fans in the seats, in that beautiful stadium of his, Mercedes-Benz Stadium. And they've had a hard time doing that.
Yes, they have.
And offense is one way, if you could just flat out outscore teams. That's one way to kind of do it right now.
Yeah, I'm with you on all that. The Julio thing, I think they doth protest too much. They'd love to hit a home run for Julio Jones, especially if they add a tight end here and maybe they draft a wide receiver and Ridley keeps developing and they're going to have to pay him in a year or so. So I don't know that that happens, though, Baldy, because ultimately the owner's got to sign off on that too. And if it's a salary dump, which I think it would – look, if DeAndre Hopkins went for it too, now, I know that's Bill O'Brien, and he's didn't know what he was doing, but it still happened. And and it's not like there were – and everybody knew he was available. It's not like they just called Arizona. Baltimore knew he was available. Green Bay knew he was available. And that's what that fetched. Julio Jones at this stage of his career with another really good wide receiver draft upon us, set to make another $15 million. If Atlanta's even thinking about moving off of him, I don't think the returns are more than a two. Is Arthur Blank going to trade a player that in his mind's eye, he's seen through the totality of his career as a difference maker? Yep. You know what I mean? For a flyer in the 2022 draft, for the 59th pick or the 49th pick. I just don't think it happens at the end of the day unless someone blows them away. I'm not sure anybody's going to blow them away. But to your point about selling tickets, it's hard to sell tickets off your backup quarterback, you know, and I think Justin Fields makes a lot of sense for them, but I don't think that's where Arthur Blank is, which would bring us to the Bengals. And this is an interesting one, Baldy. You sort of listen to what's out there in the zeitgeist and you listen to the chatter and it's Chase, Jamar Chase, and he played with the quarterback and all that. And I get that. But then I talked to some of the old school GMs in the league. And they're like, look, Mike Brown watched this kid go off in a stretcher midway through his first season. He eventually is going to have to pay that kid $40 million a year if he pans out. Is he really going to, you know, he's found the Ocho Cincos and the Hushmanzadas and, you know, even Boyd they found, you know, like they found receivers, T. Higgins, without having to put that kind of draft capital into it. And I know this kid's special. But if the quarterback's hurt, what's the freaking difference? If I had to do a mock right now, I would probably put Sewell there. Where are you on this?
Well, if I thought Penei Sewell was going to be Anthony Munoz, I wouldn't even blink. I'd make the pick, but I don't believe he's anywhere near that.
Right.
I'm just trying to find a game where he looks dominant to me. I can't find a game. I've watched 2018 and 2019 games, and I just don't see that player. I see flaws. I see potential.
What about Slater? You
know, Jonah Williams and Billy Price, they've been drafting number one picks. I mean, you can say that they've struck out. I mean, Jonah Williams was a first round pick. He's their left tackle. I mean, that's what Sewell is. I mean, I know you can move Jonah Williams or put him at a different position, kick him inside, put him at right tackle. I mean, I guess you could do all those things. If you got Ja'Marr Chase right now, and you put Chase at your X position, just your dog, Tyler Boyd, your slot, T. Higgins, your number two, I mean, you're set for 5 years at the receiver position. I think this is a deep draft with offensive tackles, Jason. Mm-hmm. I don't think it's a particularly great draft. Like, if I thought any of these tackles were Tristan Wirfs or Dredrick Wills, I would do it. Or Mekhi Becton. I would make the move, and I would take the fifth pick, and I'd go get my tackle. But I don't know that anybody is that good that we saw a year ago. I just don't see him in that class right now.
Yeah, this will be one of the inflection points in the draft. Either way, I don't think we see a whole lot of trade potential with that pick. I don't think Mike Brown's interested in trading that pick whatsoever. That brings us to the Dolphins, who I think if Chase is there, I think they leap at that possibility. I know a lot of people now that they've cut Ereck Flowers are talking O-line. Boy, I don't think that's where they are that high in the draft. And there's guys out there like Alejandro Villanueva, who I know they're monitoring as well, who might be able to plug a gap for a year. I tend to think if this isn't Chase, then it's Waddle.
Yeah, well, look, I mean, he's as close to Tyreek Hill, I think, as we've seen come out of the draft. I mean, he's probably not as strong as Tyreek, but when you watch just his return tape, Jason, we haven't seen a guy like this come out of college. Punt return, kickoff return. And that's just not to say, you know, at receiver, I mean, at 5'10" and, you know, 180 pounds, like this guy just explodes and just has another gear. And, you know, it's nice to have a guy that you can just score that quickly, the way Kansas City has done it for years with Tyreek Hill. It's nice to have a guy like that, that you can put the ball in his hands and he can just finish it, you know, with a home run from anywhere on the field. I mean, he's just got that type of speed and burst. And so, you know, if Ja'Marr Chase is there, I don't think that's a question.
Right.
You know, that Chase would be the guy. But I think Jalen Waddle makes a lot of sense. They drafted three offensive linemen in the first round last year. You know, I like Solomon Kinley. We got to see if Robert Hunt, you know, can really hold up the right tackle. Austin Jackson was in and out of the lineup with injuries. You know, I think there's some question marks whether he can really be a lockdown left tackle, but you spent three high picks on those guys a year ago. You kind of got to let them develop a little bit, because if they do, then I think you're in pretty good shape. They went out and got, you know, the backup center from Baltimore to come and play center.
Yeah, Skura.
Skura. So, I mean, I think they can line up right now the way they are. I think they got to get just more TNT in that lineup right now.
Mm-hmm. No, I'm with you there. I think that's exactly what they're looking for, dynamic, explosive, twitchy athletes. I think it's one of those two receivers. This cluster from 7 to 10, though, is pretty interesting for me, Baldy. I think the Lions – well, here's what I won't say I think. I know the Lions are very open to trading down. I know the Panthers are very open to trading down. Depending on what's on the board, the Broncos could be more interested than perhaps they are just looking at them in a vacuum. And then 10 is another spot where a lot of people believe a trade could happen depending on what's on the board corner-wise and tackle-wise. If it goes the way you're thinking, and if the Lions are evaluating these tackles the way you are, you could make the case that, okay, if they don't want to take Fields, if they're going to ride this golf thing out for a few years, or Fields or Lance or whomever, I keep coming back to scenarios, Baldy, where they could go to 15, New England comes up, and they still get Darisol or maybe even Slater at 15, or the kid from USC. You know what I mean? I think you still – because some corners are going to go, and somebody's going to take another receiver, and I think they might do that math. And maybe New England's saying, we don't need to go to 7. We can go to 10 and still get our guy. But this is where I think you really could see a trade on the clock. And I think it could happen at 8, and it could happen at 9, and it could happen at 10.
Well, I mean, it'd be fun for, you know, the audience that will be tuning in, which I think is going to be a massive audience tomorrow night, Jason. I do think that, you know, it's always fun. But it also tells you, because I'm in agreement with you, that a lot of these teams are looking to get out because there's just not that many great players at positions where you want to pick a great player if you're picking at seven. And there's just, you know, I mean, if there's a big group of wide receivers here, I mean, it's hard to kind of differentiate. There, it always is. I mean, Davante Adams was the 56th player taken in 2014. Right. He was the eighth receiver, and he might be the best receiver in football right now. So you can make, you can find receivers. T. Higgins was a nice pick in the second round a year ago. You can get these guys later on. It's a deep draft in tackles. I still see great tackles.
Yeah.
You know, I don't see, you know, Walter Jones or
right.
Anthony Munoz or, you know, I mean, just pick a guy, you know, that has been great. You know, even a Jason Peters. I don't see that type of player. So I think these teams are looking at the same thing. They're going, well, if we get more value and we can, you know, spread it, just take more chips to try to hit on more players right now. These teams, even if they have multiple picks like Miami, you know, I think they're looking to acquire more right now.
Yeah, I'm with you. I'm with you. If Detroit stays, I think an offensive playmaker is yeah. probably the way they go. Right
there. Jalen Waddle over there makes a lot of sense. I mean, they just lost Kenny Golladay, and you know, they lost their receiving
yeah.
core.
Yeah, Marvin Jones. Yeah, I mean, Devontae Smith. Any of those guys. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. If they stay, that's where I think they're going. That's where a lot of the GMs I talk to think they're going. If seven is a quarterback trade, though, and let's say it's New England and Bill Belichick and everybody thinks really highly of Bill Belichick, and if you don't think David Tepper is intimately involved in everything the Carolina Panthers are doing, you are absolutely fooling yourself.
Yeah.
Baldy, I don't know that the value, especially if somebody else has already moved up for a quarterback, I don't know that Minnesota or Chicago or Washington or New Orleans or anybody else is going to be moving heaven and earth to get to eight and give and you know falling all over themselves to give Tepper a bonanza of picks. Their analytics people have told him we need more picks. But if he doesn't yeah. like what's out there, I think he stays there and says this Sam Darnold thing is an interesting gamble, but I it has not sated my thirst, my desire, my need for a potential franchise savior. And I think whether it's Lance or Fields, he may just stay there and take whichever of those, you know, highly athletic quarterbacks is available.
Well, you know, let's just say it's Justin Fields. Cause I really like Justin Fields.
Me
and
too.
I think Joe Brady would enjoy coaching him. And who knows, they might even have a relationship as talented as Justin Fields was coming out of high school. Who knows who he crossed paths with, along the way. I know Kyle Shanahan was with him at the, you know, quarterback collective coming out of high school. A lot of people have been around him. I mean, Cam Newton was around him, you know, in, you know, 7-on-7 type competition. So a lot of people have touched bases with Justin Fields. But if you do that, how long are you going to give Sam Darnold? I mean, if Sam Darnold comes out and turns the ball over or, you know, has, you know, like a little nick injury or whatever, like, are you just moving on from him right away? I mean, you have a contract that says you could do it.
Yeah.
So then you go, I mean, to me, it's just like Sam Darnold becomes a placeholder, you know, unless he just explodes the way, say, Ryan Tannehill did, you know, in Tennessee, which can happen. I mean, we have seen it happen. But I think Carolina has got so many things that they could do if they believe Sam Darnold. But you're right. I mean, David Tepper has as much to say about this decision as anybody. And I just think if Justin Fields is there, like, you'd be kind of crazy not to take a gamble on him.
Yeah, I just look at they paid Teddy Bridgewater $20 million and will probably eat another $5 to $7 million of this year's salary to move him to Denver, which is where I think he's ultimately going. So they'll look at that and say we're getting some draft capital there. If Sam Darnold doesn't work out, could you pick up the? They're gonna pick up the fifth year option anyway. Let's say he plays well, but not enough to stave off Fields. Could we flip him for something? You know, for next year's draft. I just look at they always knew that Bridgewater was a bit of probably a stopgap, and he jumped out early in the market and said, "Here's your 20. We want you." I don't think he cares about money, and I don't think at this point. Like Scott Fitterer is going to be able to move him, you know what I mean, any way he wants. I think Scott Fitterer is a rookie GM working very much at the behest of this highly motivated owner. And I just, could see them taking a quarterback at the end of the day. And him saying, all right, you've got 30 seconds to convince me that Patrick Surtain is absolutely positively going to do more for our franchise than Justin Fields could. Go. That's a tough argument to make.
Yeah, but I mean, if you think Rashawn Slater is going to be a great player, I mean, it'd be a good spot if he's around to take him right there and just keep, you know, I mean, Matt Rhule wants to be a two-back team. He wants to run the ball. He wants to control the line of scrimmage. If you think he's going to be a great player, the way, say, Zach Martin went from, you know, left tackle Notre Dame to Pro Bowl right guard, you know, if you believe that Brandon Sheriff went, you know, the same type move from Iowa to Washington where he's, you know, an all-pro guard, if you believe Rashawn Slater can be that type of player, then that makes a lot of sense right there, regardless who your quarterback is. I kind of believe, and I've been saying this, that just keep building your team up with great players. Build your trenches really strong and deep the way Matt Rhule seems to be doing. And then when the time is right to put the quarterback in there, he's going to have a chance to succeed. And, like, that makes a lot of sense to me right there.
Well, let me ask you then. You have as keen of an eye as anybody about this O-line class. Let's say the board breaks this way and there's four quarterbacks gone and a couple of receivers, and you've got Justin Fields versus the entire O-line class at eight for that team. What would you do?
I would take Justin Fields.
I thought so.
I would. I would pound the table for Justin Fields all day long. And, you know, I just think he's just that type of player. And I just don't think they come along every year. And I can't predict what's going to happen next year. I mean, all these guys are, you know, sort of, you know, the one thing I've always said, Jason, I mean, it's not my line, it's from Bill Parcells, but he said, you know, the NFL can only take what the college game gives you. And, you know, when it comes time to quarterbacks, we're just not going to see guys like Phillip Rivers who played 50 no. college games.
No.
Or Peyton Manning or Drew Brees that yep. played 3 or 4 years of college football. You know, even Trevor Lawrence playing 3 years this year. We might not see those guys anymore. You know, they're going to be gone after two. And so you just got to get used to knowing that, you know, in Justin Fields' case, all right, look, a 25-game sample is what you're going to get. That's almost the best that you're going to get. And when you look at his athletic ability and the arm and everything else that he has, how much more of a prospect do you want? I mean, these guys all have to develop. None of these guys are finished prospects. Sure. So how much more do you want to work with, you know, when you look at Justin Fields? I mean, you put him athletically against anybody, he's as good as anybody. And then when you look at what he could become, I don't know what else you have to look at.
Well, this is pretty fascinating now because we're doing this little, and we didn't script any of this. We're doing this off the cuff. But now we're at Denver at nine. The potential for, and I don't think this is these first eight picks are crazy by any stretch of the imagination. Like, if you told me it broke this way, I wouldn't, you know, fall over. So Denver at nine, I think all things being equal, they have done a lot of preparation on Micah Parsons, the linebacker from Denver. And I know they've done a lot of work on, even though they come out and say, we don't think we need a corner. Well, that's just... That just makes me think all the more that they could very well take a corner. And in this scenario, we've got all the corners and all the offensive linemen and all the linebackers on the board. What would you like for the Denver Broncos to do here?
Well, I'm a pretty big fan of Alexander Johnson, the middle linebacker for Denver. I mean, he came out of Tennessee and he was undrafted, but, you know, he's as big as Micah Parsons. He's not as fast, but he's every bit as big as any linebacker in this draft. Zaven Collins, you name him. He's a hulking big guy. Corners, like, they're at the free agent level on their team, whether it's Ronald Darby right now or Kyle Fuller. I mean, they filled the gaps with guys that have bounced around this league pretty good. Vic Fangio is always going to make his bones on defense.
Yes.
You know, going back to his days at Stanford and San Francisco and every place that he's been, you know, he wants to lead the league in turnovers every year. That's kind of what he is all about. And so, you know, defensive player, if they don't decide that a quarterback is the most pressing need, which it is, you know.
Yes.
I think everybody sees the inconsistency of Drew Lock and says, you know, how much longer we're going to spend on this, then corner makes a ton of sense. And, you know, I mean, you could kind of toss up a corner between J.C. Horn and Patrick Surtain right here about who you want, who's going to be a better fit, a better pro. I like both of them a lot. You know, but are they going to be Jalen Ramsey? I don't think so.
Right.
But if you believe that they could come in and be and play at a Pro Bowl level from the rookie year on the way Jalen Ramsey did, then a corner makes a lot of sense right there.
Yeah, and in this scenario, the you know, we've got all five quarterbacks off the board anyway. So and I think, again, I think they're trading for Teddy Bridgewater. It could happen before we finish recording this thing. It could happen before Thursday. It could happen late Thursday night. It could happen Friday because it's not going to involve day one picks anyway. But I do think that's coming, and I think David Tepper is going to eat millions, plural, to make that happen. In this scenario, Jerry Jones has got all corners but one, and the entire offensive line class sitting for him at 10. And he's going to have, you know, maybe it's some teams burning up the phone lines a little bit to trade down. I would suspect that in this scenario, we're about to see a major run on offensive linemen, because it's one thing not to want to take one of these guys at five. But now, you know, I just keep going back to when this team was at its best, the best the Cowboys have been the last 20 years was when they bullied you up front, and everyone, everybody on their offensive line was in some weeks better than whatever five or six you threw at them across the line of scrimmage. They have to know that. They have to know how long in the tooth, how beaten up. We're talking about neck injuries. We're talking about, you know, retirements. Back injuries, spine injuries. Like, I got to think you're paying Dak Prescott $40 million. He went off in a stretcher last year. Yeah, corner's great and all, but, you know, who I would think offensive line. And here's one other thing I would throw out there, Baldy. If New England hasn't traded up for a quarterback at this point and there is still one out there, couldn't New England send Gilmore, who doesn't have a future there, and a couple of picks, and Jerry goes back five spots? And in this scenario, he's still getting Darisol or somebody like that at 15.
Well, I mean, if you want to play, you know, put your general manager hat on, I would do that in a heartbeat. I mean, I think Stephon Gilmore can still play. I think he'd love to go to Dallas. So I think something like that could happen. But look, they haven't won the division in 2 years. Zeke Elliott ran for 4.0 yards per carry last year. He was flat out pedestrian. You know, you're paying him as much as any running back in the league. And so this decline over the last 2 years is directly related to Zach Martin being taken off the field and Tyron Smith being taken off the field and Travis Frederick retiring and Connor Williams is an average player at left guard. Lyle Collins didn't play last year, and they were all backups, and they were awful. They played four cornerbacks. If you had a choice, if you could plug in, you know, Rayshon Slater right now or Penei Sewell and just, you know, find a place for him, for the first year, just put your best five out there. To me, it makes a lot of sense. But they have lost Byron Jones. They've lost, you know, Chido Awuzie, you know, in back-to-back years now at the corner position. And so you can't help but think that they've got to restock there. And it's just hard to find elite corners if you don't spend first-round picks on them. You can find them. You know, I mean, Xavier Howard was a second-round pick at a Baylor. But they're just hard to find if you don't spend – you know, high first round picks on these guys. And if you had your choice of, you know, Horn or Surtain, you couldn't really go wrong. But if you asked me with, you know, what you described with, you know, Dak going off on a stretcher and just a shattered, you know, leg that he had, the whole thing, you know, offensive line would make a whole lot of sense right here. I mean, you'd think he'd make everybody better. And those receivers would all probably eat a little bit better if Dak had a little bit more time.
And I think then we'd be looking at a run on offensive linemen. I don't know that Gettleman would take one at 11 because you'd have every pass rusher still out there, right? I think Quiddy Pay would be someone they're talking a lot about. I think if there's a corner in this case, we'd still have probably one out there, maybe J.C. Horn. I think they'd be talking a lot about that. And I know a lot of people have linked them to wide receivers, and I understand it. They've done a lot of work on wide receivers. But, man, I'm old enough to remember them guaranteeing $36 million to Galladay at a time when nobody else had that kind of money on the table. And their receiving core wasn't awful. They just, need better play from the quarterback. I don't know, Baldy. That I mean, if one of the Alabama receivers are there, I'm not saying they're not worth it at 11, but Gettleman has really been all about the big uglies his entire career.
Well, so you lose Kevin Zeitler, okay, at right guard, who was your best lineman. I think the center is fine in Nick Gates. I mean, it's nice to be able to find a college free agent that looks like he could play the position. They basically benched, you know, Will Hernandez last year for Shane Lemieux. Everybody knows that Andrew Thomas struggled as much as any left tackle in football for most of the season. Matt Parrott was a third-round pick last year. But do you really believe that he is just going to be that lockdown right tackle that you need? You know, and this is a put-up or shut-up year for the quarterback. And so, you know, and then you get Saquon coming back this year, presumably at full speed. Like, I don't, you know, to me, I would, if you could trade down and get yourself an offensive lineman and get a little bit more, I would try to do that. Now, everybody has like pointed out that Gettleman has never traded down, but it's not like he said, you know, like he hasn't tried to, but I don't know who wants to get to 11 for whoever. I mean, one of the quarterbacks dropped possibly, but you know, I mean, I think you're looking at being able to stay right there and take the best player. And, you know, if you think the edge rusher, and I think they need an edge rusher real bad.
Yeah.
You know, if you think Quiddy Pay is the best guy and it fits what, you know, Patrick Graham, the defensive coordinator, is doing, then I think that's a good spot to go get, the first edge rusher in this draft.
Yeah, I think that's where this class starts coming into focus. I know at 12, a lot of people are linking the Eagles to whichever receiver's there, and I get that. But their O-line needs help. And, you know, Brandon Graham, Fletcher Cox, these guys aren't getting any younger. I think Quiddy Pay is an under-the-radar potential pick at 12 as well.
I agree. I mean, if he's there, I mean, the Eagles are going to get themselves either Quiddy Pay if he's available. They're going to get probably one of the two corners if they're available, or they're going to get one of the three receivers. And I think they're fine taking any one of those three. You know, whether it's, you know, Smith from Alabama, whether it's J.C. Horn or Sertan, or whether it's Quiddy Pay, I think they're fine. They want to come away with this draft with three starters. And one of those, you know, one of the players that they take at 12 has to start and be an impactful player for this football team. And, you know, and then they got two third round picks. They got to find a starter with one of those picks. I mean, they got to come away with three starters in this draft to make up for all the misses that they've had in the last three drafts.
I'm completely with you. And then as we get into the teens, and obviously things start getting harder to project the deeper you get in. But I do think the Chargers and Vikings are very likely to take offensive linemen. I think the Chargers in this scenario would take Slater or Darisaw, whichever tackle was still there. I wouldn't think they both are. Minnesota, I hear, loves the USC linemen. I think they would be really happy. They'd do that and call it a day. If Dallas does move down to 15, and I don't think New England's staying at 15 one way or the other, I think they could pull an offensive lineman. And then the second half of the teens, Baldy, I know the Raiders need help on defense everywhere. They can't play the ball in the air. They don't have anybody who has great ball skills at any level of that defense.
Let me ask you, Jason, off the top of your head, with the Raiders picking, you know, with the 17th pick, when was the last time the Raiders drafted just a great Pro Bowl defensive player? I mean, I'm not sitting here and going through all the drafts and doing all the research right now, but I mean, you could pick a team and you could say, okay, this is the last great defensive player. Like, do you know off the top of your head the last time the Raiders drafted a great defensive player?
Man, I mean, I'm having visions of Gerrion Conley and Carl Joseph and, you know, Max Crosby or Clelin Ferrell
Clelin Ferrell. I mean, you just mentioned Gerrion Conley, Clelin Ferrell, you know, Joseph. I mean, they're all first round picks.
Yeah.
They're not anywhere near that team. You know, I mean, Farrell, I mean, has just been as pedestrian as you can get. I mean, I don't know how much longer they keep giving him.
They already said bye to Hurst and Arden Key, right? Said bye to them. I mean, that was supposed to be core guys for them.
You know, they drafted a second round pick from like San Angelo State, a defense lineman that they moved on after 2 years, 3 years ago. I mean, they haven't been able to just strike gold at all. Like, they've got to find a player. So we haven't mentioned Micah Parsons yet.
Yeah.
They can't seem to find linebackers at all. The Raiders, great teams are always built around great linebackers. Going back to Ted Hendricks, and you could just go through the list of great linebackers the Raiders had in their heyday. But you could pick a position on defense, linebacker, defensive end, corner. I mean, they need help at every one of those spots.
Yeah. And I think you're going to have a run on defensive players starting here. I also hear the TCU safety, Trevon Moehrig, is very much under consideration for the Raiders. Washington coming up in a couple picks likes him a lot. I think you're looking at, in this run, Arizona, if J.C. Horn's still there, that's probably the pick. If he's not, I keep hearing Zaven Collins, who you can rush him, you can put him out in space, do whatever you want with him. Washington loves the hybrid linebacker safety out of Notre Dame. I think you're going to see a bunch of those kids coming off the board here, between 16 and 20. I just think sometimes these things ebb and flow, and I think you're going to go from a run on offensive linemen in the first half of the teens to a run on these linebackers and slash safeties. And then also at the corner position, how comfortable are you with the medicals of Caleb Farley? And at some point in the teens or 20s, the risk is, the juice is probably worth the squeeze.
So let's just stay with Washington right there, Jason, since you're right in the neighborhood there and they're the 19th pick. And, they struck gold with Chase and Camp Curl last year, Antonio Gibson, whatnot. I think, the addition of William Jackson is going to be, with the pass rush that they have, like, he's going to flourish in that defense. Guys with that kind of length and ability, they're just not around very often. I think he's going to really flourish in this defense. They're building a beast on that side of the ball. If they add themselves a linebacker or a corner here, it's just going to strengthen who they are and what they are building right now. But that being said, do you think that this could be the draft where they make a move to go get themselves a quarterback of the future and let them sit behind Fitzmagic? And, if Trey Lance was hanging around there, after number 8, would they make a move?
I don't think they'd make a move higher than 10. And I also think it could get a little weird making a move with Dallas, just given some of the dynamics there, obviously within the division, et cetera. I know that there are people in that building who think that Justin Fields is worthy of the first overall pick. I know that for a fact. And these aren't, it's not a janitor. You know what I mean? Yeah. These are people of influence. And there's some in that building who think Trey Lance will prove to be the second best quarterback in this draft. I think if they make a move, I think that there's more people in the Lance camp than the Fields camp. So if they make a move, I think it would be if Lance is the last one standing and he gets maybe to Denver. You know what I mean? If he gets past Carolina, then I think a trade up is a possibility. I don't think though, Baldy, that they would I don't think they'd be gung-ho about it. You know what I mean? I don't think it would be – it's not like the Julio Jones scenario where draft chart be damned, we're just going to keep throwing picks at you. You know what I mean? Until you say yes. I think it would be much more calculated than that. And frankly, I don't know that they would be as motivated as Belichick. And they also don't have a card like Gilmore. If there's a team – I'll look at it like a Denver or a Dallas who – think they're probably closer to being good than not. You know what I mean? Would Gilmore make sense for Carolina? Not really where they are in their rebuild. You know what I mean? I don't think they want to pay a corner that kind of money who's on the other side of 30. But could, even though Vic Fangio spent a lot of money, could he be all right, wait a minute. I think Jerry would have to think about it. So I don't think Washington would have maybe the draft capital to win a bidding war if it comes to a bidding war. But if Belichick's already moved up for his guy, and let's say his guy was Fields, and this kid gets past Carolina, and they could do something within reason, I don't think it's not out of the question. And look, it wouldn't be out of the question for Chicago or Minnesota either. Don't rule out Minnesota throwing a curveball here, because they have very quietly done as much work on these quarterbacks as anybody.
Well, I always think, you know, when we're just talking about teams that do a lot of work on the quarterbacks, like, I know New Orleans is way back in the pack, but, you know, 4 years ago, they were ready to pull the trigger for Patrick Mahomes when Drew Brees still had many years left. And so, you know, Kansas City knew that, and they usurped them. But I think New Orleans is a team I'm anxious to see. We haven't gotten to Chicago yet at number 20, Jason, but I don't know how you can talk to your Chicago Bear fan base, which is as rabid as anybody, wasting all these good years on defense with stopgap quarterbacks. You know, when you make the mistake with Trubisky that they did 4 years ago, the mistake never goes away.
No.
So, you got Andy Dalton, you got Nick Foles there, and we know what they are at this point in their careers. Like, I feel like Chicago has got to make a move. They just can't sit there and keep doing this. Like, it's just not fair to the Bear fan base. And it's, how much are you really just putting blinders on yourself about, you know, what that position is to you and why it's holding you back? Like, I think Chicago has got to think about being aggressive if it makes sense.
I think the question will be, can you get the buy-in from ownership to do this again? You know what I mean? You have so mismanaged this position. It's one thing if, you know, New England's picked at 15 and there's still a quarterback sitting there. You know what I mean? And you're going up four spots. But if these kids are all going in the top 10, Can Ryan Pace, you know what I mean, look that Ted Phillips and the family in the eye and put together a compelling enough case to mortgage this draft and another draft to go get the fifth quarterback taken who they think could be way better than that? I don't know if they have that kind of cachet right now, you know?
They still have to build their offensive line. I think there's still holes there. There's going to be a good offensive lineman available at 20. If that's the direction that they go, if Darisol is there, it'd be hard to turn him down at that point. Because, whenever they are in a position, a better position to get a quarterback next year or whatever, like there'll be a better team around them. I kind of hope Washington just keeps building, because I believe, it's kind of amazing, I believe, what Ron Rivera has done there in a year. Like, to think what kind of a mess the Washington football franchise was before Ron Rivera got there and what it looks like now. It's just amazing what he's doing. And I know how Ron wants to build a football team with toughness in the trenches. Like, he's doing that. The trade they made yesterday for Flowers makes a lot of sense. The decision to jettison, Adrian Peterson last year and to go with Antonio Gibson was the right pick.
Yep.
He's making good, smart decisions. And I think Fitzpatrick is a perfect fit for that team. He'll learn Scott Turner's offense quickly. He'll give them some stability at the position. Like, just build a beast. And when the time is right, put the quarterback in there, you'll be a good football team to do it with.
No, I'm with you there, and I think, again, if they do something quarterback wise, it's more because it falls to them than they force it. New Orleans, I don't put anything past Sean Payton. It's just that 28 in this draft. You know what I mean? Where it's not loaded with blue. It's hard to get somebody. I feel like they would have to get to they'd have to make a trade first to get into. Like what Howie did a few years ago, where it took two trades to get Wentz. He's going to have to make a trade to get into the teens. You know what I mean? And then if things start falling and there's one at 10, could he and Jerry Jones make a football trade in 30 seconds? Absolutely, they could. You know, if he's already gotten himself to 15 or, 16 or something like that. So,
well, I'm interested. You know, I mean, look, Sean Payton, you know, he was the one that really, developed Tony Romo and, as a free agent. I'm just curious, what Sean looks at when he looks at a guy like Davis Mills. Or, I don't know, Kellamond, or, whether, it's, Kyle Trask, or if he thinks one of these guys can be a pro quarterback. Because, you always pay attention to what Sean's doing at quarterback. And could one of these guys that go in the the second or third round or beyond, could they be a guy that could be groomed to becoming a frontline starter? You know, I'm just looking down the draft with the Saints this year with guys that are in this draft. Shane Buechele, you know, that played a lot of football at Texas and SMU. I mean, could he take a guy like that and groom him into a frontline starter? I'm just always paying attention to what they do at that position.
Yeah. No, I mean, obviously he took the flyer on Taysom Hill. I think if he doesn't do something bold in the first round, and the odds are probably against it, then at some point in day two, he does a little something. And then to put a bookend on the first round, when we have seen trades between 25 and 32, they have by and large been for teams moving up for a quarterback to get that fifth year option on them, to get a little more control on them. I don't get the sense as we talk right now, Baldy, that trade exists. I mean, there's people in Baltimore telling me they're getting a lot of calls for 31. I mean, maybe they're getting some exploratory calls. I'm not.
Well, they're not gonna, nothing's going to happen until they're on the clock.
Yeah, I'm not sold that there's going to be a non-quarterback at 28, 29, 30, 31 who someone's like, I absolutely have to have. And I'm also not sold that there's a quarterback.
What about, Baltimore has lost Za'Darius Smith and Matt Judon back-to-back years.
Yep.
What if a guy, let's just say Quiddy Pay, is around, he's there 15. Could you see the Ravens packaging 27 and 31 and going to get themselves what they, if Eric DaCosta and his group, feel like that, like there's this guy that we believe can be the next, Pro Bowl edge rusher for us.
Yeah.
Would we be interested in going to get somebody like that?
I think it's more likely that if Quiddy Pay gets past Pittsburgh, do they try to move up a couple of spots to get him? Yeah. They feel like 31 will be an entree back into the second round. And maybe a second round and another fourth or something like that. So I think they view 31 until they're convinced otherwise as a road to more picks, not fewer. And I get the sense they're comfortable with Phillips medical. They're comfortable with Ogilary's medical. So the more I get the sense in that building, they're rooting for a run on corners and a run on quarterbacks and a run just on even receivers, because I don't think they're taking Bateman or Marshall Jr. in the first round. I think they're hoping to have an edge fall to them, kind of like a linebacker did last year. And if that happens, and it's one of the three or four that they're really comfortable with, then 31 for me is if there's value trading down, they're trading down in a second. And if there's not, I think then that's when you're looking at Landon Dickerson or Creed Humphrey or somebody like that.
I will wrap this up here pretty quickly here, Jason. Landon Dickerson's my single favorite player in this draft. Obviously, the medical is a huge issue, but a lot of this stuff is a crapshoot. There's a gamble. If he can stay healthy, we all know like that's tenuous at best, but he changes your culture. He changes your offensive line. You're going to get the biggest, strongest, nastiest lineman in this draft. Nobody's close to what he can do. The Ravens, have been plugging in free agent centers for a long, long time. This guy, I think, makes, whether it's Green Bay, Baltimore, at the end of the first round, somebody that's looking to just upgrade that position, this guy could do that instantly, the way he did at Florida State and at Alabama. I can't wait to see where he goes, because I do think he's going to go in the first round.
Me too. And sometimes
Jason is like, we have three running backs that everybody loves to talk about in this draft, Najee Harris and EDN, Travis Etienne and Javonte Williams. I think that there's a possibility you could go through this draft and not have one of those players taken on Thursday night.
I think that's a possibility. I also could see a scenario if Zaven Collins and some of those linebackers are off the board, and if Miami takes Najee Harris at 18, which is certainly a possibility, Baldy, I think you could also have a scenario where three go, where Harris goes at 18, where Javonte Williams from UNC goes at 24. I hear Mike Tomlin's a really big fan. Not as much of a fan as Najee Harris, but a really big fan. And then I could also see Buffalo at 30 taking Travis Etienne. If I was doing a mock draft right now, I won't do mine until about 24 hours from now, I would maybe even lean that way. As crazy as it sounds, just the more people I talk to, because there isn't that second wave of pass rushers like there normally is. You know, there isn't it isn't a question of, is it going to be 8 offensive linemen taken? It's, well, is it going to be 5 or 6? You know, it's the medicals on some of these corners. I could see a scenario where it's like, hey, man, I'm going to go get a football player. You know, maybe he gets a second contract. Maybe he doesn't. But I know he's plug and play. I know he can help us win now. And I think Buffalo is in win now mode. I think Pittsburgh, even though I would say Ben's done, you might say Ben's done. They think they've got – Mike Tomlin's never finished below 500. He ain't thinking about doing it this year. And we thought they made odd picks last year. Like, some people would say you don't need a running back at 18. But I just think the way they're wired right now, if they get Ja'Marr Chase and they get Najee Harris, we're going to find out if Tua can play or not, because there's no excuses.
Yeah. No, I mean, look, I don't disagree with any of that. I'm a big Najee Harris fan. I mean, there's nothing he can't do. But I also love Javonte Williams. And I was on board saying, like, he, you know, a year from now, he might be the best running back in this draft. I mean, his contact balance is, it's Nick Chubb. You know, it's Nick Chubb, it's Dalvin Cook. I mean, he's just that strong, and he's got that kind of balance. And, you know, if your offensive line is even average, he's going to make them look a lot better. I mean, he's just a rare, unique player. To see him break as many tackles as he does consistently. And he's a great kid. And he doesn't have a whole lot. He's only been a 2-year player. He doesn't have a whole lot tread off his tire. So I could see, like, somebody spends a first-round pick on Javonte Williams, it won't surprise me. They're getting a good football player.
Well, it's going to be, as it always is, filled with drama and suspense and intrigue and twists and turns. That is part of the beauty of the NFL draft. And by the time we reconvene, which I think we'll do next week, you know, to review the draft, we will have all 3 rounds will have played out. Hopefully the world won't end on Sunday. I know where Kyle Shanahan's taking the under on that one. I'm going to take the over. And we will have plenty to discuss. As always, thank you guys for listening, checking us out here on Odyssey. If you enjoy what we're doing, please rate, review us, give us feedback on iTunes, Spotify, wherever you get your podcast goodness. We hope you enjoy the draft, and Baldy, I know you certainly will.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to the whole process. I'm working for a lot of different groups, and really, you know, it is fun if you put as much work as we do into this.
Yeah,
just to see how your eye is and how it compares to some other teams. And, you know, we're certainly going to pick it all apart. I'm not a big guy to give out grades the next day or the day after. Like, but I understand the exercise. Fans want to know. So we'll be here to kind of do that process next week. And there certainly is always a theme to every draft, and there's always surprises. And we'll be here to talk about it next week, Jason.
Sounds good. Enjoy the draft, everybody. We will talk to you next week.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and 3-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.